month, sir?
Good evening and welcome to the Monroe City Council meeting. This is a regular business meeting for Tuesday, September 2nd. The time is now 7 p.m. Liz, would you please call the roll?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Hanford, Cutaback, Rasmussen, Camp, Davis, Gamble, and Gehring.
Thank you. And Councilmember Davis, will you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. The first item that we have on this evening's agenda is under announcements and presentations. This is a presentation from the Volunteers of America. Will Mr. Mark Johnson please come forward? Thank you.
So the last time I was here was actually for the letter carriers food drive. We did a proclamation identifying that as a food drive for the county. What we didn't have a chance to share at that time is that is the largest food drive that happens in Snohomish County, for Snohomish County Food Distribution Center, which is run and operated by Volunteers of America. Well, there are 21 food banks and 18 feeding programs throughout the county that Volunteers of America supports. And through talking to a couple of the council members at Economic Alliance events and other events, we have found out that there's not a lot of knowledge about what Volunteers of America does in the community. So everybody knows our name and those that we're not from in the area, but as far as what it is that we do to serve those in need in our area, that's not always well known. So I just want to spend a few minutes to share with you some of the things that we do. And I'll leave a hand up for each of you as well. But we break our services down into six core areas. Basic needs is one of them, which is, includes our food banks, but also our housing program. We offer transitional housing for families in need, focusing on both young families and then also moms who are either pregnant or have young children. We send them through a 90-day intensive program. We provide the housing for them, but also case management. We work with them on early childhood education, if that's a need for them. We work with them on resolving any disputes. We work with them on getting evictions, wipe out their records so that they can get into a rental situation and have a stable living environment. So we're really trying to integrate all our services into one program area. That program is called Mom's House, which is located in Marysville, but we also work with people in Monroe and the whole entire Sky Valley area and all throughout Snohomish County providing stable housing for people. Outside of basic needs, we also have early childhood education. So we run and operate three state licensed ECAP preschools in Snohomish County, in addition to providing a licensed child care center in Snohomish. And then last year, we also started a brand new program in Granite Falls, working with a high school there and focusing on the 500 girls a year in Snohomish County that are giving birth while in high school, half of which are dropping out of high school. And a big barrier for them, and a big reason why they're dropping out of high school, is because they aren't able to go to school and take care of the child at the same time. There used to be three programs within Snohomish County that helped deal with this issue. Two of those shut down over the past few years, so we reopened one of them in Grand Falls and are looking at partnering with the Monroe School District to do another one in Monroe sometime in the near future. We also do dispute resolution. So when people are going through a divorce in Washington State and there's children involved, you have to deal with the parenting plan. So we help mediate some of those circumstances. A lot of times when parents go before the judge, it is mandated that they go through mediation rather than deal with the court system. We also work with foreclosures. We can settle landlord and tenant disputes. We can grant a certification. So again, if somebody has an eviction on their record, they can go through a certification course with Volunteers of America mediators, and that makes them more likely to be able to rent again from another landlord. We also do mental health work and behavioral health. So 211 is a number that most people are familiar with. 80% of the counties in the country have 211. So it's Snohomish County, San Juan, Island, Skagit, Whatcom. 211 is run by Volunteers of America. So if you call 211 and you're in need, there's a Volunteers of America operator who's answering and then directing you to services. Either Volunteers of America services and programs or services provided by Compass Health, Catholic Community Services, and other agencies that we partner with. But in addition to the 211, we also offer mental health counseling. We have massive level clinicians on staff. We do online chat and other things so that when people are In crisis, approximately 50% of people accessing online chat are right in the middle of hurting themselves at the moment, but it provides an anonymous way for them to access help and seek out services so that they can deal with whatever the issues are at hand at that moment. Personal support services is another program area that we have, working with people who are developmentally disabled. We have just under 100 clients throughout King County, north through north of Bellingham. And what we do with that program is provide 24-hour days, 7-day-a-week care for people who have disabilities and help keep them living within their own homes. Huge program that really works well with our clients, making sure that they are getting their needs met, whether that is bathing, shopping, cooking, cleaning, but also making sure that they're socially active and engaged in the community. Another program area, and we have to have this one because our name is Volunteers of America, is our volunteer engagement services. So in addition to the 450-plus staff that we have to make all of our programs work, we have about 10,000 volunteer hours a year being offered to us to provide our food banks. All of our mediators are volunteers that get paid to go through the training. And then we use volunteers throughout all of our other programs to serve those in need. Our last program area is, I'm going to forget when I have to look at my notes. So I wanted to show a short video that explains some of the programs and gives a couple of testimonials. It'll take about 3 minutes, and then I'll take any questions if there are any. But then I have a hand up to leave for everybody as well that explains a little bit more about what we do in your community.
It's great to be able to provide emotional support. And for that period of time, I did provide that emotional support, and I ensured that that woman was not going to kill herself that night. But the reality is that I didn't have any tangible resources to offer her to know that they're going to get a person on the other line, part of the way that they're going to get to a person and actually help them meet those tangible needs. I would love to be able to do that. I feel like that is really giving that person something to hope for.
When a single mother walks into our food bank looking for food, what she's really after is a loving, stable home to provide their children an opportunity to have a positive vision for their future. So when I look at our services, the question I ask is, how can we integrate our services to serve the whole person?
Child and youth services, as well as the other core services, are kind of umbrella programs that allow us to give a holistic approach to the people that we're serving. So we're not just targeting food and shelter, but we're looking at the rest of the family and how can we help the children in that family.
I've had so many people come into our offices looking for services, and they're exhausted, and they're telling me, you know, I've been to six different agencies today. I just need answers. I just need help. And the idea behind these innovative service models is that they would come in, and regardless of the need, we would actually create that connection for them rather than just handing them a number and sending them back out the door.
Anybody who has walked into a service and are feeling hopeless and that the needs aren't being met will, with this new vision, be able to leave with hope and to be able to leave with resources and plan on what to do from day to day. I think we're learning a lot about, wow, we have a lot more to offer our clients. And instead of just being focused on conflict resolution and saying, okay, we're here to resolve this issue, we're able to say, we have all these resources behind us. Let's really listen to what this parent is going through, what's the impact on the children, and let's make sure that they know about everything DOA has to offer so that 100% of our clients are walking on the door knowing exactly what they need to do next for themselves.
Basic needs, personal support services, mediation services, behavioral health services, child and youth services, and volunteer engagement are all essential for how we provide those services necessary to create a positive and powerful vision for our future.
Thank you. I see that Councilmember Gehring has a question or a comment.
And good to see you again. Met a couple years ago, one of the economic development events. So a lot of talk about conflict resolution. I think you touched about that right on the beginning. So you, like getting evictions removed from records, is that part of what is involved there? I didn't know if those two things, because you had mentioned that at the beginning, I didn't know if that might be one of the conflict resolution things. So I was just curious what that was.
Services that we offer.
Okay.
A lot of times the struggle with family space, if they had an eviction in the past and they're looking to get in a safe environment, they have a lot of renters in the area that won't rent if you have an eviction on your record. And so we have renters that we work with, but then we also have the mediation that we offer, and then the renter certification that we can take clients through. That makes them more likely to get a place to live.
Okay. And that's happening Snohomish County wide.
Yeah, right. Dispute resolution is another thing like 211. It happens all over the country, but depending on where you live, it's run by different agencies. For Snohomish County North, it just happens to be run by Volunteers of America. We have the largest dispute resolution set in the state and one of the largest in the country.
I appreciate it. Yeah, very informative. And able, oh yeah, this and this. So I appreciate that video. Thank you very much.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Mark, thank you very much for coming this evening and for all the work you're doing in our community and for the presentation.
Thank you.
The next item that we have on our agenda is comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. We have a sign-in sheet. Is there anybody that signed in? Okay. There's nobody that signed in. Is there anybody, any member of the public that would like to come forward to speak? Okay. Seeing none, we're going to move into executive session now. We're going to go ahead and meet in this room this evening. Our executive session will be pricing of property. Pursuant to RCW 4230.110, subsection 1, subsection little c, for an approximate amount of time of 20 minutes. And then we'll continue with our agenda. Thank you. We're back in session. The next item on the agenda is the consent agenda. Councilmember Cuddeback.
Can I pull 2?
Yes, approval of AP checks and ACH payments, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Item 2 has been pulled. Councilmember Hanford.
Move to approve consent agenda number 1 and 3.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion. It's loud tonight.
Oh.
I have a motion and a first to approve the consent agenda items number 1 and number 3. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Oh, yeah, 6-0. Please let the record show that Councilmember Camp is currently out of the chambers. So back to consent agenda item number 2.
Just a question on the payments. There was a payment for a Prince William. What was that? Sounds foolish, but I saw it and I'm like, what is that? Sorry, it won't pull up on here on mine.
Sorry.
I thought maybe you put it in there to see if we were reading.
Refund check.
Like a plant.
Oh, I bet it was a refund.
It's a refund.
It was a refund.
Yeah, that's a utility refund. That's the name
okay.
of the customer.
Oh, really? Okay. All right. That's it. So I'll make a motion to approve consent agenda item 2.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Cuddeback. I have a second from Councilmember Hanford to approve consent agenda item number 2. Please let the record show that Councilmember Camp is in the room. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. We're now moving on to unfinished business. This is number 1, AB 14105, City Web and Social Media Presence Options. This is continued from August 19th, 2014. Is this Gene?
Oh, well, I can answer any questions, but I can't get my computer to pull it up for some reason.
I know, that's amazing.
Okay, Gene, so go ahead.
Again, this is continued discussion from last week. We've done a significant amount of work on this particular topic. We looked at other cities, what other cities have done. We've outlined a couple of different options here for council to discuss and hopefully vote on. That's our goal for this evening, is get some direction from council on which direction they would go or would like to go on social media presence.
All right. So we were having some issues with bringing it up technically. Mine just came up.
Yeah.
Okay. Councilmember Gehring.
Thanks. I just wanted to reiterate last time what the recommendation that came based on information from staff. I'm certainly open. If people are going to use it, you know, there's certainly interest in option number four. If people are actually going to use it, then you know, then I think that's a good thing if we want to go that direction. I'm certainly not opposed to it all and certainly didn't want to communicate the last time, but there's the additional staff time, things like that. If it's going to be used and it sounds like there is specific interest, and I think Councilmember Camp was at least interested as well. And I know we had looked at it as part of our committee, you know, before we had talked about it, had considered a different option. So if it's going to be used, then, you know, and maybe not by everyone. I think this is kind of a high, and I can't see the number because it hasn't come up on my screen yet.
It's only $1,600.
Takes a while.
You know, it's not that much more, as Councilmember Gamble was pushing out. But that's also a high-end number, I believe. What's that?
Oh, I was just your comment that it's not that high. But anyway, just keep going.
Anyway, if there's, you know, if folks want to roll with number four, then let's go and do it. I don't know that everyone will use it. I think the number that we see there is based on like everyone using it. It's kind of the high end number, if I remember correctly from last time. Versus, let's say, three people use it, maybe that number wouldn't be so high. So, from that standpoint, I don't want to burden staff. Those are, you know, my concerns from last time, from what we had heard. But again, if not everybody's using it, it is still an option for everyone to use. Then we don't see the full impact, and you know, and it does provide the benefit, you know, as we all talked about last week, about, you know, communication with constituents and social media. So I'm not going to make a motion, but I did want to at least express that before we have further discussion. Cool. Thank you.
And before we move on, just to bring things back up to date, the request tonight is to select option 1, 2, 3, or 4. And if you want to select with add appointees, and based on the selection that council makes this evening, city staff will go back and start drafting a policy related to this. And that policy that gets drafted will have some influence over staff time and hours. The archiving costs is, you know, that's a pretty good estimate based on our research, but that's something else to add. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a question for the city attorney. Do you have it? Can you see the, I don't know whose computer's working.
He's got
option 2 and option 4. The comparison between the two, is there a difference in the exposure of liability for the city?
Between 2 and 4?
Between 2 and 4, where we have a city webpage, or where we have web media accounts that are maintained by individual council members, as opposed to media accounts which are maintained and archived by the city. Is there a difference in liability to the city?
If I understand your question correctly and the options correctly, the more city officials having direct access and managing their own accounts, there is the potential for more mishaps, whether you're referring to a PRA issue, an
right.
OPMA issue, et cetera, et cetera. All of the legal concerns underlying the social media policy issue generally are going to be enhanced and potentially exacerbated the more individual officials have control over their individual accounts.
I think you're answering the question. So I'm concerned about the liability for the city. If a mistake is made by an individual council member regarding public records, the city is still liable to the same degree it would be with number four.
As a general precept, that's an accurate statement. There are a number of different factors that a court would consider, including the city's good faith in the context of a public records
right.
issue. But as a general matter, that is an accurate premise.
Okay. In that case, I would like to move that we adopt option 4 to have him, see if I can find it. a city webpage, social media accounts, and elected official social media accounts maintained by the city. I believe that's what it is.
Okay, I have a motion for option four, selecting option four, and I have a from Councilmember Camp. I have a second from Councilmember Cuddeback. And we now have discussion on the motion. The order that we have right now is Councilmember Gamble, Councilmember Hanford, and then Councilmember Davis. Councilmember Hanford. I'm sorry, Gamble.
So just, you know, we had some really good discussion on this, and I think, you know, I was very much in favor of option four the last time we talked. A lot of it, it's general around. I'm glad you asked that question, Jim, because for me it didn't make sense to put something in place for policy that we would be put, because, I mean, it's still a constitutional right of a,
right,
a council member to have a page, and by passing a policy that immediately puts them, you know, kind of in a juxtaposition, you know, well, don't do it, but you can. But don't do it. I mean, that's, in my opinion, is what number two really is saying. And then we're still liable as the city. And for my, and the magic words that, you know, City Attorney Lyle just said that I kind of wrote down was court would consider to determine. Well, just to find out court to determine whether or not we are liable would definitely cost us more than $1,600, which is the difference between Plan 2 and Plan 4. So I'm fully in support, and we'll be voting for option 4.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, thank you. The I think one of the things we talked about was for the appointed officials having to make a decision on that. And so I don't know if that would be an adjustment to the motion, but I would suggest that we appointed officials are not included in this. There's no reason for them to need to worry about that, and then if they get elected, then they would be able to.
If you want to make a friendly amendment, so well, you can ask the first or the second to make it friendly.
With the motion is the motion right now is for option four. It doesn't include add appointees, so it sounds like you don't want to add appointees. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so then the motion as stated would meet your goal.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
Okay. So. Yes.
Thank you.
Oh, I thought it did.
Okay. Councilmember Davis.
So my question was basically along those lines. Option four doesn't include appointed officials, and there's a considerable cost for including those. What is the, as I wasn't here for the discussion last time, what is the pluses or minuses in having them or not having them covered in this?
It would seem to be that the pluses would be the same thing that council members would feel that elected officials would benefit from, would be applied to appointees by being able to have city-related business on a Facebook or social media account. And have that information backed up, with an archiving system, which is what the archiving system column is. The downside would be the financial cost, and also the staff hours involved in that, as well as the training. So the one way to look at it is that staff could certainly draft something for the elected officials and see how it goes for a year or so, and then see about extending that to the appointed officials. Or you could add the appointees. Would you have other thoughts, Gene?
I would agree. And the reality is if they are using social media and talking about city business, we get a public records request, we've got to be able to provide that anyways. And so we'll have that discussion one way or the other.
Is that an issue? I mean, if the employees or appointed officials are discussing city business, they're doing so under their as a part of their job and everything else, and they've always done that for 100 years or so. And you know, what's different? What changes, or what risk? I guess is what I'm asking. If they're not part of that, and is it, so would it be better just to have this for as it stands, just for the elected officials, and not even really be concerned about having the appointed officials involved in it.
certainly an option. Again, you are correct. If they're doing it now, we still have to produce the documents. If we have the archiving program in place and include them, then we'll have that extra coverage to be able to pull up documents should they put something out there that we don't know about or they had forgotten about and didn't produce during a public records request.
Well, I'll just sum up with I'm in favor of option four also, but I think maybe it would be a good thing for us to look at it again after a year and see how well it's worked and how we might have a better idea of how it might work for appointed officials as well. So.
And Councilmember Cutterback and Rasmussen also have their lights on. Councilmember Cutterback?
Thank you. So I just want to be clear, for an appointed official, when there's a public record request and we have planning commissioners and they're appointed but they're paid a slight stipend, I think, but they're appointed, they're required to turn over anything in this public records request on, say, Eastman Row, or if they had any comments on that. So I have a little bit of concern on the wait and see for the appointed. I know it's more money, but if there are appointed officials out there on social media currently not receiving any policy or any guidance on how to behave from the city, that's something we might want to include in the policy, some guidance for them, even if we're not backing up or archiving them yet or giving them the option of being archived, because it's my belief that it is occurring to some extent, and if it is, then I think it behooves us to look at having that backup of having some archiving to protect the city's interest. So even though they're appointed, I don't think we'd have a high number of appointees take up on this. That would be my guess. Remember, these estimates are the highest estimate if everybody, you know, has a page or everybody does it. So just something I think we need to think about and make sure, even if we don't include them in the archive, that we include in the policy, you know, behavior and guidance on what to do so you're not violating the Open Public Meeting Act and all of that.
And I think it would be fair to say that the policies that we would develop would include employees, appointees, other volunteers that are subject to public disclosure, and about the policies that would be relevant for them using non-city accounts. With that said, as we develop this, if over the course of the next several weeks that it's going to take to prepare this, if there's a change in perspective where appointees are desired to be added on, that is something we could probably add on at a later date. Again, we're going to be developing policies for the elected officials, and a lot of the same rules will probably apply to the appointed officials as well. So, not saying to kick the can down the road a couple weeks, but what we're looking for tonight is guidance, particularly with option four or two or whatever, so that that main chassis can can be put in place. Anything else, Councilmember Cutterback?
That's it.
Okay, Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Last week, very in favor of option four, still very much in favor of that option as well. So, but just to clarify, being we're on the topic, appointed officials, elected officials, I mean, it seems very obvious. Appointed officials, example, Planning Commission, Parks Board, so forth like that, correct? Elected officials, obviously, those of us here. The thought that kind of spurred a question was a few years, I should say several years ago, or some years ago when there was a, I can't remember what council member it was that had to step away from the position and another council member was appointed into that position, correct?
Right, that person's still considered
an elected official.
Right.
Thank you. So they would fall under this umbrella then.
That's a good question.
Social media, I mean, to me says Facebook, Twitter, typical. Is that what we're referring to as far as social media, or is there a bigger broader scope of what that encompasses?
So one of the difficulties here with public records is that the technology is changing faster than the laws.
Mm-hmm.
And the technology to back things up is probably slower than the technology to create new things. Based on the technology that we've looked into, we were able to take care of Twitter, Facebook, Was there something else? Was there a third
one? Can add on to the things, but it was for more costs like Pinterest and others, but it's more costly than what I got here.
I think the capability is a number of different items, and all of those items were added, but each one would be a separate account and a separate cost.
Sure. Okay. I think the intent right now is Facebook. I think the numbers here, including the staff hours, refers to Facebook and Twitter. Okay.
Perfect. Thank you.
Councilmember Hanford.
Just a clarifying question, going back to Councilmember Rasmussen's question. My understanding was that if a council member is appointed, they're not an elected official until they're actually elected. They're an appointed official until such time as they're actually elected by vote.
Actually, for if I'm
go for
if I may.
It. Yes, sir.
I would concur in the mayor's response on that point earlier. If an individual is appointed to an elective office, that individual, for all intents and purposes, under the policy that the council's discussing right now, would be considered an elected official, despite the fact that his or her reaching that office occurred through a council appointment rather than a popular vote.
Thank you.
All right.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you. We'll put that on the extended agenda for bringing forward a policy. The next item that we have is under new business. This one is to be pulled. This is AB14-111. So we're going to go ahead and pull that. The next one is new business number two. This is AB14-112, authorize the mayor to sign an amended public defender contract. Who has this? Crickets, how about you?
Elizabeth.
Liz?
I think Liz has it. Up on my screen. Do you have this one? Still, I got spinning.
It's grinding.
Sure, this is in follow-up to the discussion, I believe, a couple weeks ago with Scott Snyder here, updating you as to the recent case law regarding the Wilbur case and the updates to the public defense system that are recommended from the outcome of that case. And what we've done here is we've looked at the Links. Contract for public defense for the remainder of 2014, and we have made an update to the pricing to bring the pricing per case to the market rate, and also to make updates to the contract to ask for more records to be kept and for more reporting, and so therefore that price also addresses more work that's being done. Again, this is just for the remainder of 2014. And so you can see the price of the budget impact is generally $11,000 increase above what was in the budget. So I believe that a budget amendment in that regard would be addressed later when we do a budget amendment later in the year. But tonight is just acceptance of this new contract, and it has been reviewed by the public defender, and she has already signed off.
Okay. What staff may not be aware of is that it's taking a long time for things to load, so we are all looking at white screens here, except for our attorney who has everything in print.
Me too.
Happy to share.
I print stuff out for
now. Councilmember Cutterback.
Thank you. Elizabeth, just a couple of questions. So I saw in here that the caseload was a maximum of 240 cases a year, and that the contract price that we're doing is $6,000. A month, and so there was a clause in here about if going over the 240 cases that she would contract out with a backup attorney, and then will that include the $6,000, or is that an additional fee on top of that?
It would be an additional fee.
Okay, that's what I thought.
In general, we have on the extended agenda right now for next week some backup contracts, which would be for a backup attorney in case she does reach
sure.
the 240. So anything over that limit, and it would be at the same rate, but it would be on a per case basis. So really it would be based on the work available, so it wouldn't be a salary. And then also possibly for a conflict attorney, same kind of a thing in case she needed to have a conflict attorney.
Okay.
We're still working on those contracts, so I'm not sure that will make it next week. I'll have that determination in the next day or so. So that's that would be secondary to this as our main contract. But you are correct. She's
Much
limited
faster.
To 240 cases for the year. And I believe we've received some information that probably she may not reach 240, so
okay.
We may be fully covered, but we would, of course, have the contracts in place for the backup if needed.
And so what do we put, do we budget for that, like a placeholder, we put in more than the 6,000, or do we put, moving forward? Because it sounds like the cost can add up with you pay for expert testimony and all this other stuff, and so we're going up $2,200 a month. And then there's additional fees possibly on top of that. I'm just curious what the...
For the 2014 budget amendment that I'm going to be doing at the end of the year, I'm probably just going to put in the $11,000 unless the chief advises that we're going to have a bunch of cases coming up.
Okay.
But that's my plan right now.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Okay. Has it come up on everybody's computer?
No.
Okay. So the requested action is to authorize the mayor to sign the contract for Indigent Defense Services with Ms. Amy Trua and expressly authorize any further minor revisions deemed necessary or appropriate. That would be the motion.
So moved.
So moved.
Okay. I have a first from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Cutaback. Councilmember Cutaback, did you have another item?
No.
Okay.
No.
Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you. The next item that we have, we're moving on to council member reports, Finance and Human Resources Committee.
Thank you, Mayor. We had a very good discussion this evening about preliminary discussion with the mayor and Diane about the upcoming 2015 budget process. Most of it is fairly standard. We had explanation from the mayor that we're looking for a somewhat conservative budget for next year, which we tend to agree to, and those were the high points. Went over the calendar. I don't know if the other members have something they'd like to add.
Yeah, the only thing I would add is just that I know that Ben is, we were informed, is doing part of the review process that we went through and approved last year, is doing the salary study. And then also that we will be seeing soon, too, just verification that the mid-year touch points happen. That was is part of that process. We're supposed to get that.
Right.
And it probably will come in a consent agenda or something, but just basically that those touch points happen so that we can be assured that every employee was touched in the review process mid-year.
Thank you.
Not physically touched, but...
You knew what I was saying.
Come on. I think that ends the financial report.
Okay. Yeah, no, I just appreciate it.
I'm sorry.
The clarifications from Diana from the mayor, and schedule's before us, and we'll be having lots of discussions in October and November. So thank you.
Okay. All right. The next item that we have on our agenda is staff and department reports. And, we're going to continue with council member reports. So council member Gehring.
Looking forward to Bearcat football Friday night. It's at Oak Harbor, so if you're in the mood for a little bit of a road trip, it's about 79 or 80 miles, depending on which mapping program you look at. 7 o'clock in Oak Harbor. Yeah, faster if you don't take the Mukilteo Ferry, probably. You drive all the way around. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. Then the second game is at Stanwood, so we have to wait a little bit for home game. But I'm excited about it. A bunch of us are going and cheering on the Bearcats on Friday night. And I've got a high schooler starting tomorrow. I'm feeling really old. Can have a high score. So, all right, thanks.
Tomorrow or Thursday?
Orientation is tomorrow for freshmen.
Oh, that's right, freshmen.
It's
kindergarten.
School night.
Freshmen,
school
kindergarten,
night.
Sixth grade start tomorrow. That's right. Yeah, no, just back to school that time of year. Bearcat football, absolutely. If you don't want to make the trek all the way up, you can watch all kinds of youth football on Saturday up at the high school. That time of year, fair's over with a great success, I think, and again, weather was great for the whole deal. Fireworks were great, concerts were great. It's all good.
Councilmember Davis.
I don't have anything. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Kent.
I just have to echo that the fair and the parade were great. It was great times, and it's great to see everybody up at the fair at the times I was up there doing whatever errand I needed to do. And that's it. Thank you.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Nothing.
Councilmember Cutaback.
Just a comment about the fair. Do we typically get a kind of a wrap-up of
reference.
How much money, how many people? I think it would be interesting if we ask fairgrounds for that. So, you know, just put it as information only, but I'd be curious because the weather was great. It seemed like most of the week, and I was really impressed with how the police handled the traffic. It wasn't as bad as in previous years. It didn't feel that way. So,
I always need deadlines.
Just curious about kind of did they meet their marks, how many people, all that.
Okay, and knowing a little bit about that topic, they will usually give an update, a formal update, in the first quarter of the following year.
Oh.
So we could certainly contact, and we'll put it down on our list of things to do, to contact the Parks Department at Snohomish County to see if they have any information that they can give us that's preliminary. I understand that things were looking good, though. The Parks Director spoke with me at one point when I saw him out at the fairgrounds and said that things are going very well this year, but didn't have numbers or anything for me.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
You're welcome. Yep. Councilmember Hanford.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed the Bill Cosby show, concerts. Chris Young concert, Newsboys concert, and the fair was just a great time. Yeah.
Nice. Good. All right, let's head out to staff. Ben, how was Wisconsin?
It was
great. Nice.
You found a beer?
Welcome back. Mike.
Some upcoming events this weekend, Dog Jelly Trials. It's the Australian Shepherd Club at the Sky River Park.
Nice.
December 5th or 7th. Mm-hmm. And then the following weekend, September 13th, is Swift Night Out. So you can see the banner, all the posters around town. Also, volunteers of note, on that same day, the LDS Church contacted me about, we have about 30 or so people that are interested in doing a service project, so we're lining up something. It might be a long-term place, the landscaping, or it might be out at Lake Tide, doing some community service for us.
Cool.
And then last, I just wanted to let you all know that, in case you haven't heard about it already, is that there's a Monroe Community Calendar Group that's been formed. During the last month, and the Chamber of Commerce is taking the lead, and they're hosting this. It's a monthly meeting, and representatives from agencies and nonprofits and service organizations meet. And basically, it's to share about upcoming events that are going on, so then we can all collectively broadcast and announce these events to the community. So that's one benefit there of this meeting. Once a month. And then another benefit is it opens up, you know, the opportunities for more partnerships and collaborations among community groups. So, because I think it's a neat thing. And last month was the first meeting, and like I said, it's for a monthly at the Chamber.
Thank you, Mike. Paul.
A couple things. We're still busy. We have several submissions and short flights underway. In fact, we have two or three projects that are probably coming to some form of lunar reaction in the next few weeks, pretty easily. Between some forecasts for building revenue for 2015 and talking with developers, builders, looks like there's going to be a fair amount of new home activity in the next 12, 18 months. Much more residential than at this point than the commercial side, but they're both, you know, fairly strong. Not that good. On marijuana, plan to come on the 23rd to give you an illustration of how these our proper discussion, of including parks and so forth, will affect the map. And be prepared to say the meeting following that, you have you take action on an ordinance that actually makes some changes for your direction. And sign code, we're on track for September 16th, is it? And September 23rd for final action permit. And tomorrow, pre-application meeting with Tractor Supply. Just
behind
the
check.
Right on.
Brad? Hi, two things. Turkey. It's already done. Yeah. The preliminary design for Turkey Place between
Jenny and
the
Yay! get her done.
Oh. Yeah.
Ready, set.
When's the golden shovel? Can we help?
Not at the end of the meeting.
Yeah, there
you go. Take a lot to be eased at.
There we go.
So that's that. You can look at that if you have any comments. Other one is, and the white crosswalks, the other one, we're working on that. I got some numbers to put together and some options for you to consider, and I'll have that for you next week for those of you who are interested in that. That's all I have.
Thank you, Brad.
Brad, could I ask one question on that?
Yes.
If that's okay.
Yes, go ahead.
The connection to Oaks Street, that's a, like a later phase, right? Because isn't Oak Street technically a private road?
Yeah, Oak Street is not.
Not actually, that's not a City of Monroe maintained, even though everybody uses it. It's not. Okay. Okay. So that portion will require additional, will require purchase at least? Okay. But it's later.
Nine,
okay.
Yeah.
Got it. This will be great once we get some. I appreciate it. Thanks. Thank you.
Thanks. Diane.
Nothing tonight.
Okay. Gene.
I'm actually tomorrow meeting with the owners of the shopping center, and I've already floated the idea, and they're very supportive, and they're working on a master plan, so it'll be me.
Right on.
That's all I have. Thanks for the question.
That's awesome.
Councilmember Hanford, I just noticed your light was on.
Yeah, thanks. Just clarifying question, Brad. It looks like it's one lane going each way and then a turn lane going down the middle.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right. And we still have other items on the agenda, so we normally do this at the end. Before I go over the extended agenda, we'll go ahead and pass this around. The Chamber of Commerce provided us with a recognition certificate that will probably hang up on our wall somewhere, but go ahead and pass that around for the council members to see. That was given to us on Thursday night last week, and so I want to thank the Chamber for recognizing the City of Monroe and our efforts in helping out with the Fair Days Parade. I think we're going to go ahead and move into the draft agenda for September 9th now and the extended agenda. Gene?
Thank you, Mayor. September 9th, 2014 draft agenda. Under presentation, we will have Mark Abney here from the Senior Center. We have the consent agenda. Under new business, we talked about this tonight. In fact, this is to authorize Mayor to sign the public defender contracts. That's the backup services. Under council member reports, we have the P4 committee and the draft agenda for September 16th, 2014.
Anybody have any questions or additions, requested additions to that agenda? We'll also have the YMCA crosswalk area report. Council member Cutterback?
Yes, next week's agenda looks pretty light, seems to be. Wondering if we could have a discussion on the police and fire Appreciation Week. It's in November. I know the chief's not here. I sit on a committee, a group of volunteers that meets periodically to organize that week for the appreciation of police and fire. And in the past, we've read a proclamation at City Council, but it would be nice to see if we do something more or have that discussion. I know the committee needs a new banner, which might cost about $1,500, and they may be doing something a little bit bigger at council. It's the week of, I think, November 17th through, and we always end the week with an event at the fire station, midday, but I know a lot of people work and can't attend that, so have a discussion on, could we do something that night at council a little bit bigger than just reading a proclamation, so.
We have it. We have another list that we keep of things to do, and it's on that list to put on the extended agenda. If it doesn't require, what I'll do is we'll talk with management team on Thursday. If it doesn't require any prep from staff, because we try to have time to prep things, then if it's just a discussion item, we could probably put it on the agenda for next week. If there's no opposition to doing that, I'll follow up with staff, and appropriate, we'll put it on the agenda for discussion.
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay. Seeing no opposition, we'll do that. Councilmember Davis?
P4 has a meeting next Monday, mm-hmm. and it's listed at 4 p.m. Is it going to be 4 p.m. or 6 p.m.?
We moved it to 4 instead of 2.
Or 2.
Yeah.
Okay, so then it's 4?
It is at 4.
Fine, yeah. Okay.
I will not be able to make it. So I need somebody to chair.
It's fine.
Your turn?
It was my turn last time, but we didn't show up.
So it's back on.
So I'll promise you it's
you're on, right?
I'll do it again.
Yes, yeah, so now you have to show up.
Right. Right. Okay.
So 4 o'clock.
4 o'clock Monday.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
All right, then. Let's do this.
Next item is the extended agenda. Gene?
Oh. I can. We will add that discussion next week after we talk about it staff. Level, and other than that, if you could peruse through here and just make sure we haven't missed anything, I think everything's up to date this week.
You can take the question mark off. I'm definitely going to be gone on the 7th.
Okay.
There's no question mark anymore. Thank you.
And we have two council members out on the 16th as question marks. Are those still question marks?
Yeah.
I'll take that as there's still question marks. Okay.
That's what I'm looking at right now. Sorry.
Okay. Anything else for the extended agenda? All right. We're going to go ahead and move on. Yes, sir. Councilmember Camp.
You can take the question mark, put it by my initial on the 7th. I'm not sure if I'm going to be gone, but we're also changing the finance meeting to
14.
The 14th. And I would like to add something to the future agenda. Councilmember Cuddeback reminded me of it tonight. Considering the amount of work that we ask of our planning commission, I'd like, and I don't know when the last time this was done, but I'd like to look at the possibility of an increase for their stipend. If one of the other council members would agree.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Okay. So we'll put that on the extended agenda. And that would you're considering that would become effective January of 2015.
I want to discuss options we have with that. And
would you yield for a comment?
I
know that when we reviewed it for council, we discussed it and researched it in the finance committee, and then presented based off of the information we found. We studied.
When was that?
That was last year.
Was it last year?
Uh-huh.
I don't remember it. Okay.
There's somebody else sitting right there last year.
So we'll go ahead and we'll put that on the extended agenda, and we can pull back up the information that the committee looked at.
Yeah.
Okay. Councilmember Gamble, was that? Okay. All right. The next item that we have on the agenda is OPMA training. And I believe that Ms. Smoot has this. Liz?
Get the popcorn. Oh.
Just to start off with a couple of comments on this. This is in response to Andro State Bill that passed in March of this year, which mandated open public meetings and public records act and records retention training for all elected officials, and open public meeting trainings for certain appointed officials that fall under the OPMA, which is pretty much all of our boards, commissions, and committees. So I have begun making the rounds using materials provided by the Attorney General's office, simply because it seems like the best possible way to go about this training is to use the materials that they gave us. So tonight we'll be looking at a video for Open Public Meetings Act, and then we'll go over the PowerPoint that they provided to us, and it'll basically just be a reiteration, and at that time you could ask any questions that you have on those particular topics. This should all be mostly review, I believe, for everyone here, but we are required to do this. And then I will be documenting our training tonight, so it is on the books. This is an every 4 years requirement, so everyone that's in office, this will be your 4 year stamp of approval, and then anyone that comes into office after that time, I'll have an alternative training action for those people coming in so that you can kind of keep everyone up to date. So
So I will also pass around, I have a little sign-in sheet for everyone, and then there's also your certificate. And so please take yours and sign it, and then what I'd like to do is, if you would give them back to me, I will keep a copy here, and then I will give you all back your copy as well. And this way we'll be well documented that you all had the training. So I'll go ahead and start with the video.
And Liz, this is a two-part training, correct?
Yes, the second part, the Public Records Act training, will be on the 16th. So tonight is just OPM.
So if you don't make the 16th, you'll want to coordinate with Liz about taking the training another time.
That is correct.
Okay.
What is a governing body? What is a meeting? What is action? What is final action? Travel and gathering. Regular meetings, special meetings, executive sessions, public attendance and comment, minutes, liability, other laws, and additional resources. The Act has several clear requirements, and compliance with them is improved with training. Training can mean the difference between complying with the law and expensive litigation. The Act applies to governing bodies of multi-member public agencies, both state and local. Public agency includes A, in a state board, commission, committee, department, educational institution, or other state agency which is created by or pursuant to statute other than the courts and the legislature, B, any county, city, school district, special purpose district, or other municipal corporation or political subdivision of the state of Washington, C, any sub-agency of a public agency which is created by or pursuant to statute, ordinance, or other legislative act, including but not limited to planning commissions, library or park boards, commissions and agencies, and D, any policy group whose membership includes representatives of publicly owned utilities formed by or pursuant to the Washington laws when meeting together or on behalf of participants who have contracted for the output of generating plants being planned or built by an operating agency. In some cases, an entity which is not an agency can still be subject to the Act when it is the functional equivalent of a public agency. This determination depends on whether it performs a government function, receives government funding, the extent of government involvement or regulation, and whether the entity was created by government. Examples of public agencies subject to the Act include city councils, county councils, school boards, fire district boards, and state commissions. Agencies governed by individuals, such as a single director, are not subject to the Act. Some activities of public agencies are not subject to the OPMA. They include certain licensing and permitting activities, quasi-judicial matters, matters governed by the Washington State Administrative Procedure Act, APA, and certain collective bargaining activities. All meetings of the governing body of a public agency shall be open in public, and all persons shall be permitted to attend any meeting of the governing body of a public agency, except as otherwise provided in the OPMA. A governing body is defined as the multi-member board, commission, committee, council, or other policy or rulemaking body of a public agency, or any committee thereof, when the committee acts on behalf of the governing body, conducts hearings, or takes testimony or public comment. Meeting means meeting at which action is taken. Physical presence of the members is not required. A meeting can occur by phone, or in some cases, by email. I will talk more about email exchanges later in this video. A meeting does not need to be titled meeting. The OPMA also applies to retreats, workshops, and study sessions. A meeting does not occur if there is not a quorum. Both action and final actions are subject to the OPMA. Action means the transaction of the official business of a public agency by a governing body, including but not limited to receipt of public testimony, deliberations, discussions, considerations, reviews, evaluations, and final action. Final action means a collective, positive, or negative decision, or an actual vote by a majority of the members of the governing body when sitting as a body or entity upon a motion, proposal, resolution, order, or ordinance. Final action must occur in public. Secret ballots are not allowed. A majority of the members of the governing body may travel together or gather for purposes other than a regular meeting or a special meeting, so long as no action is taken. And remember, action includes discussion of agency business. This means a quorum of members can travel to a meeting together, or they can gather at a public or private event, such as a festival or social function, so long as they do not collectively discuss agency business or matters. Regular meetings are recurring meetings held in accordance with a periodic schedule by ordinance, resolution, bylaws, or other rule. State agencies file the notice of regular meetings each year with the Office of the Supervisor. Special meetings are meetings that are not regular meetings, called by the presiding officer or a majority of the members. This means they are meetings not on a fixed schedule, such as on a day different than the regularly scheduled meeting. Certain notice requirements apply to special meetings. For example, 24-hour advance written notice must be provided to members of the governing body unless waived, provided to local newspapers, radio, and TV stations that have a request on file, posted on the agency's website if the agency has a website, unless other exceptions apply for agencies with few staff, and prominently displayed at the main entrance and the meeting site. The notice must specify the time, place, and business to be transacted. There is an exception to the notice requirements for emergency special meetings. Those are meetings involving injury or damage to persons or property, or the likelihood of injury or damage, or time requirements make notice impractical and increased likelihood of injury or damage. Under the PMA, an executive session is a part of a regular or special meeting that is closed to the public for the limited purposes listed in the OPMA. The grounds for holding an executive session are narrowly construed. The purpose of the executive session and the time it will end must be publicly announced before excluding the public, and the time can be extended by further announcement. Examples of purposes include certain real estate discussions, reviewing negotiations on publicly bid contracts under certain conditions, evaluating the qualifications of an applicant for public employment, and meeting with legal counsel regarding enforcement actions, litigation, or potential litigation. The OPMA provides a list of authorized executive session purposes at RCW 42.30.110. In addition, a public agency can have a closed meeting to discuss matters not subject to the OPMA, such as deliberating on a quasi-judicial matter. Other laws may provide additional procedures or authority for particular meetings or hearings, or for particular agencies. An agency must carefully follow the law when meeting in an executive or closed session. For example, when meeting in an executive session under the OPMA to discuss agency enforcement actions, litigation, or potential litigation, there are three requirements. First, legal counsel representing the agency must be present. Second, the purpose is to discuss an agency enforcement action, litigation, or potential litigation to which the agency, governing body, or a member acting in an official capacity is a party or is likely to become a party. And finally, public knowledge regarding the discussion is likely to result in an adverse legal or financial consequence to the agency. Remember, an agency can discuss only those matters in an executive session under the OPMA that it has told the public it would discuss. The members cannot talk about other topics in that executive session. As we discussed, all meetings of the governing body of a public agency shall be open and public, and all persons shall be permitted to attend any meeting of the governing body of a public agency, except as otherwise provided in the OPMA. An agency also cannot place conditions on attendance, such as requiring persons to register their names or fill out a questionnaire before attending. As noted, email or phone call discussions among members of a governing body can be a meeting under the OPMA, but the purpose of the OPMA is to permit the public to attend and observe agency meetings. So when the public is unable to attend email or phone call discussions that are meetings under the OPMA, the Act has been violated. For example, it is generally agreed that the members can meet via a teleconference call so long as, one, any public notice procedures are satisfied, and two, an agency sets up a process for the public to attend, such as having a speakerphone available at the agency's official meeting location so the public can hear the discussion. In contrast, since an email exchange among a quorum of members of a governing body is not open to the public, such an exchange in which action takes place is a meeting that would violate the OPMA. And remember again, action is broadly defined. Those email exchanges do not comply with public notice and attendance requirements for regular or special meetings. The OPMA does not include a requirement that public agencies allow public comment. Nevertheless, many public agencies do permit some public comment period at a meeting, such as at the beginning of a meeting. Agencies can put reasonable procedures in place to allow for public comment, and the OPMA has procedures for dealing with disruptions when the orderly conduct of the meeting is unfeasible. The OPMA is in RCW 42.30. A different law describes meeting minutes. That law is at RCW 42.32.030, and it says, the minutes of all regular and special meetings, except executive sessions of such boards, commissions, agencies, or authorities, shall be promptly recorded, and such records shall be open to public inspection. That law does not require any specific format for minutes. That law also does not require an audio or video recording of a meeting, or many agencies make such recordings. We have advised that the minutes should, at a minimum, recite the significant actions of the agency. Violations of the LCMA can result in a lawsuit against an agency and its members. A court can impose a $100 civil penalty as personal liability against each member who knowingly violates the LCMA. A court can declare any action taken at a meeting not held in compliance with the LCMA null and void. And a court will award costs and attorney's fees to a successful party seeking a remedy under the LCMA. To recap, this presentation covers the highlights of the Open Public Meetings Act. Public agencies may be subject to other laws governing other particular meeting or hearing procedures or governing particular agencies. And the laws concerning agency meetings and hearings can also be amended from time to time. Therefore, agencies are cautioned to be mindful of all the current laws concerning their meetings and hearing procedures. For example, as of the date of this video, the 2014 legislature passed a new law amending the LPMA. That act will require regular meeting agendas to be placed online 24 hours before the meeting's start time, with certain limited exceptions. If the governor signs Substitute House Bill 2105, it will become effective June 12, 2014.
Thanks for participating in the Attorney General's Open Government Training. For more information, there are resources available for agencies to receive training and technical assistance for compliance with the Open Public Meetings Act. An official should first consult with its agency's counsel for routine assistance and for training. Additional resources are listed on this website. The Assistant Attorney General for Open Government, Nancy Creer, is also available to provide information about the Open Public Meetings Act.
Done.
So if everybody could please sign their certificates and send them over to me, I'll make certain that Liz gets them. And then Liz, did you have any other comments? That's what I thought. Thank you. That's right, we have a slideshow too.
So the PowerPoint presentation, as you all have there, is fairly comprehensive of the material just covered. So I'll just go over it very quickly. And of course, if there are questions, I suppose the mayor could note anybody that has any questions and we can address them at that time. We also wanted to have this in the meetings when the attorney was here so that if any of the questions would be best to have that answer, that he is available to answer those questions. So please bring forward any questions that you have. So just a reminder on the OPMA passed in 1971, requiring meeting to be open to the public, and then the RCW 4230. So if you're interested in the specific statutes and what it lists there, you can check that out. A couple of quotes on the OPMA. And in the purpose, it just, you know, pulls out those public boards and commissions. In the conduct of business, so not just our full council, but that's where our boards and commissions come into this. And talking about the actions taken openly and deliberations taken openly and allow the public to be a part of the decision-making process. Transparency or sunshine laws, shining light on government. If you hear that term, they're talking about these laws, the OPMA, the PRA. And a review of the areas that the OPMA applies to. So, of course, we know that our city council is subject to these. And a listing of those it does not apply to, if you're interested in those. For the governing body, it just goes over all the meetings that are open to the public and all persons permitted to attend. In review of what is the governing body, so any committee acting on behalf of the body also is included, so those are your boards and commissions. What is the meeting? I think the big takeaway from here is a meeting is regardless of the forum, it's when you have a quorum. So the number of members of an organization required to be present in order for business to be carried on, so i.e. to pass a motion. And so that medium could be in person, email, phone, via call or text message, on a blog, social media, etc. In a review of what action can be, not just the motions and whatnot, but also the deliberations, the discussions, considerations, reviews. So really that term action is very broad. Just keep that in mind.
Liz, I have a question, sorry.
Oh.
That's okay, just about the meeting. They don't talk anywhere in here about a serial meeting. Do you know, using that term, is that term not used where it's actually if you, so if I talk to two other council members and they talk to another one, that violates if it's all the same conversation, even though I didn't talk to three, correct?
So again, the idea of the OPMA is to talk about specifically having a meeting and taking action and properly noticing it to allow the public to attend that meeting. So if you had separate discussions at separate times in person, those aren't necessarily a meeting where a quorum of you was present at one time. If you're talking about a medium such as email, where at some point all four of you would be on an email trail and there's a record that all of you were on that same email or text message or social media site, then there's a record showing that all four of you at one point were in the discussion, the same discussion, and if you took action, that could be possibly considered a meeting if it wasn't properly noticed and the public wasn't given an opportunity to attend.
So I just want to make sure I'm clear. So if I talk to two other council members about an item that's on the agenda and one of those goes and talks to another council member, that does not violate this.
Our attorney has pushed his late.
And that's an area, thank you, Mr. Mayor, that the law is actually evolving on.
Okay.
And to go back to your original question concerning the term serial meeting, that's a term that the case law has developed over time, and there's specifically a case called Woods versus Battleground School District that first brought this issue into the public eye. And again, technology is outpacing the law on the books in this situation, and the court in determining in the facts of that battleground case that a meeting could occur even when a quorum of council members were not physically present in the same room, did so in order to remain true to the spirit of the OPMA, and it's for exactly the reason that the city clerk indicated. The whole purpose of having the light shine on the government
right.
actions is to ensure that this the city's business, the governing
public.
Board's business, takes place in the light of day. And you can have a, for all intents and purposes, a meeting, even without all being physically present, if the message gets carried on from one person to another, and that the aggregate result of that is that the council is deliberating or discussing or making some type of a collective decision, taking action, as the OPMA defines the term, in violation of the law. But you're right, the term serial meeting will not appear in the OPMA itself. This is a case law term.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Liz.
Okay. So I think we went over action again, just the terms there, and then final action. So of course, taking that in the public section and not having secret ballots, those are just two of the main points there. Specifically going over the travel and gathering, just talking about that you can travel or gather so long as no action is taken. And just a reminder that to look back at what those actions are and that discussion is action. So that's just one of those things to keep in mind. And then that example of attending community events, and as long as you're not taking part in action, it's technically not considered a meeting, so it's not in violation of the OPMA. Review of the regular meetings with a set schedule. We have that here for our council. And then, of course, the special meetings. So anything that does not occur on those dates, it falls under different noticing, which normally the city clerk's office coordinates with our city attorney's office to make sure that all of those noticing options are available to the public and in accordance with the laws. And this just goes over those specifics for the noticing. And then a quick note on those emergency special meetings, especially involving injury or damage to persons. You know, so there's allotment there if we had to make those provisions. Note on that public attendance, we do not have to have a public testimony portion, but of course our council has chosen to have that. And then also just the note of we can request to have their names and other information, but we cannot require, so we cannot say no, you cannot offer your opinion if you won't write down your name. And that is certainly how we function. Just a note on interruptions and disruptions, just allowing for, you know, clearing the room, the meeting can continue, moving to a new location in case of some of these interruptions, you know, earthquakes, things like that, you know, where we would need to relocate, things of that nature. Review of the executive session purposes. Of course, this is not applicable to our boards and commissions, but it is applicable to the city council. And those specific purposes can be found in the RCW 4230-110, if you're interested in those. And in general, this is sort of just a general list of what those are. It goes into greater detail if you go visit the RCW. And specifically calling out the items where you have to have legal counsel in attendance for those items. So here's just a few notes there on the penalties for violating the OPMA. So you can see that civil penalty against each member. So there is personal liability related to an OPMA violation. And then, of course, the court can award costs and attorney fees to a successful party seeking remedy. And any actions that were taken at a meeting that was found to be in violation of the OPMA would be null and void. There is the note there about the minutes, so just recording back out what happened at those items. They are required. There's no set format or deadline, but we do try to follow in that reasonable amount of time to get them open to the public. And then just the final notes on the OPMA assistant of the AG's office, in case anyone is interested. That's the end of the PowerPoint, if anyone has questions.
Thank you, Councilmember Cutterback.
So I saw in there that it said executive session minutes are not required. So that means that we could do them. Is there any cities that do them, and do they ever have a time limit of then, you know, kind of like the Watergate tapes, after a certain amount of time they're released to show the public? Are there any cities or boards that do take those minutes and then ever reveal them that you know of?
I'm not aware of any in my experience. Mostly they're done just like we do them here, where people leave and there's just the notation made of what the subject is, the time frame, and then of course if they're extended, so the public is aware of what is being discussed per the RCW and how much time was discussed. And they did make that point there of saying that each item needs to be separately mentioned. So if you know, sometimes you'll hear that here, that if we have two items but they're both of the same sure. subject, we'll make sure to call them out separately. I'm not sure if Zach has any thoughts on any agencies with the executive session items.
I know that pardon me? Oh, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I know that that has been a subject of discussion in some cities. To my knowledge, I'm not aware of any that have actually taken that approach. I think that there are some practical and legal concerns at play there. What comes immediately to mind is a disconnect between what the OPMA allows the council to discuss behind closed doors on one hand, and what the State Public Records Act allows the city to withhold from public disclosure on the other. And those two concepts are not necessarily hand in glove. So there are some potential issues and concerns there, given that disconnect.
I would add, too, is I've heard that if you are found in violation of those executive session laws, that there can be some constrictions put on your counsel. I've heard things, and I mean, this is just heard through my own trainings, that they can actually ask you to record your executive sessions, but then the items would be kept exempt from disclosure unless they were ordered to be disclosed. So that's something that I just heard, but I don't think that's not a regular practice.
And I personally haven't heard that. It wouldn't surprise me if that was part of some type of a consent decree or court order requiring some type of a compliance schedule for a chronically misbehaving city, for lack of a better word. But I personally have not seen that in my own practice.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions or comments? Liz, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Liz.
I'll go ahead and give your certificates over to...
certified!
Stamp it.
Remember, part two will be in approximately 2 weeks.
Not certified.
Not approximately. Exactly.
Exactly.
You're certified on this part. On this part. Halfway.
Public disclosure. Public records.
Certificate.
Okay. So the next item that we have on our agenda is an executive session. This is for actual litigation. RCW 42-30-110, subsection 1, subsection little I, subsection little I, with potential action to follow.
And the duration of the executive session, Mr. Mayor?
Was
15 on here.
10 minutes now.
Oh, 10. Sweet.
Good. Like
that. Oops, sorry.
Okay, we are now back in session. Having nothing left for this evening, Councilmember Hanford.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Councilmember Hanford has the first. It sounds like the rest of the council has the second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion passes 7-0. Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. My knee.